This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing. So we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Morning, Doc. Good to see you in studio again. We're building a bit of momentum again after quite a bit of Zoom time, but live time is good.
Yeah, Gordon, it is nice to be back in. I'm glad I caught you. I know that you're just about to pack your walking shoes and you're going off on your big hike this weekend.
Yeah, it's the Chock Foundation charity walk up Sarnie Pass. I'm looking forward to that. And that depends, of course, whether the snow clears up because it's snowing in Sarnie. So I'm not sure whether we're going to get up or down. But, you know, I mean, worse things in the world than lying at the bottom of the mountain drinking glühwein, I should imagine.
Can't there's no bad weather, Gordon, just bad clothing.
100%.
So you got to get some snow gear and off you go.
And speaking of bad clothing, we have got with us one of the icons of radio in South Africa. I mean, Doc, I think we're going to just hand over, you and I just sit back because we've got in studio Stan Katz, who knows more about radio than you and I will know in a lifetime. But Standy, I mean, you're looking resplendent. Once upon a time, South Africa's most eligible bachelor. Are you still South Africa's most eligible bachelor?
That was a long time ago, Gordy.
Well, you're not eligible.
Well, listen, no, it wasn't the most eligible bachelor. Just a point of correction. It was 1983, and Darling Magazine's readers voted me the sexiest man of the year. And the next month they went out of business. Do you remember Darling Magazine?
I do indeed, yeah. But I'm still trying to get my head around the image of you as South African sexiest man. I'm quite traumatized by that. I thought that was Jeremy Maggs.
When they phoned to Tim, it was not a competition I entered. I hastened to add. But so when they phoned to Tim, I thought it was a friend of mine taking the piss.
Yeah.
And anyway, it turned out, and it had a lot of advantages.
I'll bet it did, yeah. which I'm sure is why you're studying a law degree and graduating with a law degree probably was quite.
Well, let me just put it this
fortuitous.
Way. The floodgates of plenty were opened.
Excellent.
And then in 1987, again, nothing. I had nothing to do with this, and I was voted South Africa's most elegant man. I was anything but. The reason I was probably voted because the magazines that were involved and the various sponsors, I was quite high profile. So they thought, well, let's get a high profile figure and we can hang a whole lot of things on this. After that, I went out of my way to be elegant, which was very difficult for me considering I had socks with holes in them.
Well, you're very elegant today, and I have to say that. Now, I think, part of your elegance, I guess, I mean, part of your fame came from the original Sun City commercial. I've suddenly realized that was where you came swaying across. No, it wasn't you swaying across the bridge, was it, Stan? You had something else. You just, did you emerge topless from a swimming pool or something like that?
No, it's quite possible. There's a lot of things I don't remember. But I worked for Gray Phillips at the time. I wrote the commercials, I produced them, and I voiced them. So that was a nice gig.
Yeah, that was We Will Rock You, We Will Rock You. I think it was the first really big locally produced TV sort of commercial that kind of blew everyone's socks off. Nobody had seen anything like that before. I mean, yeah.
Did you ever have the pleasure of working with Saul Kirshner?
I didn't, but his placid tones and his gentle manner, his urbane reserve is legendary, of course.
His urbane reserved philosophical manner. I once presented an ad to him. There were many occasions, but he was the most difficult person to ever work with. I learned a lot from him and applied it in my own career when I was heading up an organization. I presented him with a print ad that I'd written, and Ian Blake had done the artwork, the art direction. He stared at it for what felt like an hour. It was probably about 30 or 40 seconds. And he says to me, "That's not worth a ball of fucking shit." Pardon the language, but I'm quoting directly.
Yeah, this is advertising land, so we're allowed to speak like this. I'll put it in quotes.
Please do. Yeah. Just then, one of the booking clerks from the booking area comes past. He calls her and says to her, "What do you think of this crap?"
Well, I mean, I'm all in favor of research myself. Yeah. You know, I think research is important.
That was the extent of the man's research.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we asked you to send us a little bit of a CV as a backdrop for a long and illustrious career. And I noticed on page 473 of the abbreviated CV that you graduated from Wits with a law degree. How the hell did you go from
law?
BCom law.
I didn't
do
the LLB. I was going to do the LLB. And then my brother, who's 10 years older than me, was my hero growing up, had started a business selling motivation and sales training tapes and convinced me to join him in the business. Now, this is, I mention this for a very good reason, because it has a direct bearing on how I got into radio. I soaked my brain with the material. There were authors like Napoleon Hill, whose famous book was Think and Grow Rich, that thoughts are things, everything starts with a thought, and if you have the desire and the belief, you will achieve it. In fact, the very words were, anything the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Anyway, the business folded after a year. We had lived it up. We thought, if we want to be successful, we need to portray success. So we all drove fancy cars, and I stayed in a fancy executive apartment, but we blew out of business, and I was at a loss. I was 22. I thought, what do I want to do with my life now? And I was listening to a radio, Swazi radio, and in fact, one of the songs that was instrumental in me wanting to be on radio was the Doobie Brothers' Listen to the Music. I'd never heard anything like that on radio in South Africa. And I thought to myself, I might have been slightly inebriated, but I thought to myself, that's what I want to do. It was always about the music for me. I'm a frustrated rock star. I wanted to be a musician. And it occurred to me that there are quicker ways to starve. But if I could be on radio, I could be close to the music, and who knows, I could become rich and famous. Actually, I never even thought of that. I thought, what could be better than playing the music you love and talking shit?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I managed to get an appointment to at Swazi Radio for a job interview. I arrived there. There are three executives, the general manager, the finance manager, and I don't know who the other
King
guy
Sabuza,
is.
The third,
no,
I think.
No, no, no.
Kingston Swati's father, no?
Oh, no. That didn't feature yet. what did feature was, who was the guy from Botswana? Botswana? Mangopi.
Oh, okay. Mr. Yeah, okay.
No, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So I go in there, I pour forth the torrent of my inspiration, and I inform them that I would like to be a disc jockey. Now, picture this. I'm wearing a suit that I was 22, wearing a suit that I'd last worn at my bar mitzvah. It was probably, it was five sizes too small. I had an Afro hairstyle, which I'd gelled down so I would look respectable. I probably looked a sight. Anyway, they tell me they're not looking for disc jockeys. What do I know about programming? So I say, well, if you tell me what programming is, I'll tell you what I know about it. And they said, well, thanks for coming to see us. We appreciate it. And as I'm walking to the door, I thought, I've just missed the opportunity of a lifetime. I turned around and I said, I've got a BCom. And I was hired in admin. I was an administrative assistant. Not an administrative assistant, the administrative assistant.
Quite right. Rank is important, Stan.
And, man, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. I learned four things which are still valid, and I would share this with any of your listeners. The Katz's Laws of Success. It applied to radio in my case, but I think it applies to anyone in any business. Always volunteer. Don't take no for an answer. Don't expect it to work. And don't expect thanks. And that has stood me in good stead.
Well, that was, it's interesting that we've had that convergence of insight, because I think that was the technique I applied to at my matric dance. So I'll get somebody to go with me, Stan. It's amazing. We arrived at the same.
You didn't take no for an answer.
Didn't take no.
Apparently these days no means no.
I believe so, anyway. But yeah, so from that, I mean, obviously, most well known in your sort of days with 702. I've tried to remember some of the shows. I think the morning Zoo was one. But I mean, tell us a bit about the early fledgling involvement with 702, because that was really where you climbed the throne, so to speak, of radio fame.
Well, it actually started at Swazi Radio, which I renamed Swazi Music Radio. I was the administrative assistant. They hired John Burks, as the program manager, and I asked for a transfer to the programming department, which was granted, and I landed up working with John, and we became firm friends. Now, in order to make myself useful or indispensable, I used to compile a pop news bulletin and give it to the jocks to read. Pop news in those days, I would find old magazines up to a month or more old, and just write ghetto like Elton John has split type of thing and give it to them to read. I gave Burks his to read one day, and he said, read it. Now, prior to this, I'd been bombarding them with audition tapes. Mm-hmm. Every time there was a vacancy, I'd be there with my clutching my audition tape in my sweaty little hand, and they'd hired Gary Edwards. Then I'd be in the next vacancy would come up, I'd be there with my little audition tape. They'd hired Daryl Eustace, professional, superb broadcasters. And Burke says to me that day I hand him this thing to read, he says, read it. And the first thing, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. you could hear my knees knocking. I was so nervous. And my first inclination was, no, don't do it. Turn it down. Put some more practice in. But I thought this was the opportunity. And I read it terribly. But after that, I was reading all the news bulletins, and eventually they gave me my own show. And Burks had made me music director because of my love of music, my involvement with music.
And your BCom, obviously.
My BCom got me the job. I'm music director. He makes me music director. I'm then informed one day that they've hired Gruber Wayne from Australia as music director. And I thought, wait, hold on, one cotton picking, corn chucking, chicken plucking minute. I'm the music director. But he was a highly experienced guy, and I became assistant music director. Again, first inclination is huff out of there because they've taken, they've demoted me.
Yeah.
And then I thought, hang on a second, I will not only know what I know, but by the time I'm finished, I will know what he knows. And I learned an amazing amount. I learned the ins and outs of top 40 radio. Top 40 radio is you play the top 40 hits in rotation. And then, but this guy had a blowtorch personality. He and Burks clashed. This was a guy, Groover Wayne, who would brighten up a room when he walks out. But I learned from him, and he was fired. And Burks huffed off, not because of that, but he got it into his bonnet that this wasn't working for him. I begged him to stay, but he was adamant. He left. I went from assistant music director to acting program manager to program manager, all in the space of a year or two. And then I was ready for the general manager's position. So I wrote a long report. The Kirshes owned the station.
That's right. He's forgotten the Kirsch connection there. That's right. That's right.
The Kirshes were big in Swaziland.
Correct. Yeah.
So I wrote a long report on what was wrong with the station, why the incumbent station manager was useless at what he was doing, why I, in my humble opinion, thought that I would do a better job, and I submitted my report to them. So I'm in the studio taping my show. Everything was taped in Johannesburg, flown to Swaziland, and broadcast from there. It was real bush radio. It was pirate radio. And so the general manager, I won't mention names because I don't want to involve Bill Otto. So I'm busy taping my show. He sticks his head around the door and he says, "Can I see you, please?" I said, "Bill, I'm busy. I'll see you after this." He said, "No, I need to see you now." So he says to me, "I believe you're not happy with the way I'm running the station." So I said, "That's right, Bill, and I plan to resign." I mean, I saw the axe coming. What was I going to say? Trying to talk my way out of it when they'd given him this whole report, this damning report on his abilities. So I said, "I plan to resign." He said, "When?" I said, "At the end of the month." He said, "That won't be necessary. You can leave now." I was out.
Yeah.
And got a job in... SABC hired me to do a couple of shows on Five, a couple of shows on the English service as it was in those days. And I didn't know what to do with my life. I was distraught, by the way.
Yeah.
I was doing what I love to do. I was in my element. I liked the people. I liked the job. And I was out through nobody's fault but my own. I'm not a political person. I don't have a political bone in my body. I do not work well in corporate politics. Anyway, so I did a concert at Ellis Park, a rock concert. I had eight of the top groups at the time. And I landed up managing one of them, the Band of Gypsies. And then I could no longer get them a job. So I managed to get a job at J. Walter Thompson as a junior copywriter. I wanted to be close to radio, and I thought the closest I could get at the time was in advertising. Also, I liked the people in advertising. I liked the creative environment, and I liked to party like there is no tomorrow.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, I mean, many of us had the a similar route. I mean, it's like the inscription on the bottom of the, you know, Statue of Liberty: "Bring me your sick, your wounded, your huddled masses."
Yes.
And that was a refuge for everybody who had, like myself, who was a school teacher and ended up completely in an area where I had no intention at any stage of my life to be in advertising. So that part of it resonates with me.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
It's also what I'm sure resonates is that it was a fun industry to be in at the time. I mean, we worked hard and we played hard. Mm. We would leave for lunch at 12 o'clock or 11:30 and come back at 4 if we came back at all.
Mm.
But we met our deadlines, and we produced good work, and there was a lot of respect for creative people. So I was kind of rushing out at lunchtime doing the show on the SABC English service and rushing back to the agency. And then I got offered a job in America by a person I'd met at a radio convention, Paul Ward, and one of the most experienced radio people in the world. He said, how are we doing for time? I've got to stop rambling.
No, no, you're doing great. That's fine. It's it's just that your watch is on the other wrist. Okay, there we go. That'll help. Okay, there we go.
Just before you go on, Stan, just Gordon. I mean, it's such an interesting chat and such a great story with so many lessons in it. So, you know, if we go on, we can maybe break it into two episodes. You know what I mean? An A and a B, and then we see how we go from
there. No, I think so. You know, I mean, and just, you know, to our listeners out there, what we're going to be throwing forward to now is, you know, Stan, after all this, is going back on air, and he's going to host his own show on Chai FM starting on the 14th of August. So we'll cover that off in a moment. But so I know that your time in the USA really informed a lot of your view of radio, and music radio was what we were used to. We all grew up listening to Burke's Yuckle, Stuckle, Lekka Lekka Lex, and all that kind of stuff.
Burke was my hero.
As he was for all of us.
Before I landed up working with him and then in time became his boss, he was my hero. And I love the man. I mean, we became firm friends.
Yeah.
I was, during his recent illness before he passed away, I visited him several times and I was just distraught at what this amazing, huge talent, what had become. It was just...
Oh, look, the legacy is there, and I think that's what we're all going to fondly remember. But it was your trip in the States that shifted your lens, and you were the first guy to move beyond radio as a regional kind of option. I mean, the whole talk thing was revolutionary at that time.
We'll get to that. But so I get offered. Paul Ward says to me, "We'd met at." at a convention, I think it was in San Francisco. He was programming one of the top radio stations in San Francisco, KFRC. And we became firm friends. How I met him, it was so interesting. I had paid for myself to go. I was working for Radio 5 part-time. Mm. I needed to have a radio station that I was representing. So I paid for myself. I went there and I had Stan Katz, Radio 5 South Africa, and this big tall guy comes up to me and he says, "Tell me about Springbok. Tell me about Springbok Radio." And anyway, he said, "Me and Steve are going up to the room to smoke a bit of weed. You want to join us?" So Steve was Steve Marshall, the story consultant for WKRP in Cincinnati. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
We became firm friends as well. He had the best job in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of, incidentally, a lot of those episodes on WKRP actually actually happened. Like, for example, the Thanksgiving turkey drop, where they, from a helicopter, the radio station was dropping turkeys into the parking lot. And not realizing that turkeys don't fly.
No, not these, well, anyway.
These things were dropping, splattering on the parking lot, hitting cars and breaking windscreen. Anyway, so I digress.
Digression is good, Stan. This is the digression show. You may digress as much as you want.
So anyway, so Paul says he's now working for Wolfman Jack. Wolfman Jack was the biggest name in radio and television in America at the time. Wolfman Jack, Paul Wood was working then at Boston. Wolfman Jack came there to do a promotion and offered Paul a job, which I urged him to take, and he did. And then he offered me a job. He said, "Come work for the Wolfman." So I said, "Well, cool. What's involved?" He said, "Well, come for the interview, and I'm sure you'll do well." So I packed up everything. I wasn't coming home. That's how determined I was to get the job. Now, Wolfman Jack had a syndicated show, syndicated worldwide. It was on American Forces Network. It was all over America. And I said, "Well, look, as long as I'm coming across, let me see if I can place the Wolfman show in South Africa. I said, how much do I charge? I said, well, the top rate we're getting is $150 a week. Capital Radio was just starting in South Africa, out in at Port St. John's. I flew over just to meet with them, and I said, I've got a show that you guys have to carry. And I played them the demo. And they said, this is amazing. It was the Wolfman Jack disco show. He had several shows, the oldest show, Graffiti Gold it was called. I don't know if you ever saw American Graffiti.
Yep.
Wolfman Jack played himself in that, in their movie. So I go there and they say, how much? I said, $150. I said, that's for nothing. That's for nothing. Again, I see my life flashing before my eyes. I see all this money I'm leaving on the table. Yeah. So I say that's, I'd learned to think on my feet. So I said, that's per hour. And it's a three-hour show. So I said, hang on a second, that's $450. So I'll tell you what, take it for $350 and I'll square it away with the Wolfman back in Los Angeles. So they said,
that's the BCom degree again kicking in, Stan.
It has stood, and it stood me in good stead. So then they said, okay. I said, one thing though, it has to be for a year. So that's cool. And I said, paid in advance. I arrived for my job interview with a check for $18,000. Yeah. Do you think I got the gig?
Yeah, well done.
I was determined. Yeah. And I worked with, so Audio Stimulation was the Wolfman syndication company. Also syndicated a bunch of other top radio personalities, Charlie Tuner, people we wouldn't have heard of in this country, Charlie Tuner, Hudson and Harrigan. And I was working with these guys, the top people in America, and I learned one of my best lessons, and something I would urge anybody in radio in this country to do: prep your show, prepare your show. These guys would spend a day preparing a three-hour show. Wolfman had two writers who sat with him in the studio. They'd each written one-liners for him. And they'd hand it to him, and if he used a line, he'd tick it and pay $5 for every line he used. Mm-hmm. And if you happened to be one of the writer of that line, you'd get $5.
Sure.
I learned that. And I also learned that it's real. This is a business. It's not fun and games. I mean, it is fun and games. And my motto has always been, if it ain't fun, it ain't happening. When I was running 702, I would get notes from people saying, are we having fun yet?
But I see where we've gone wrong with our show, Doc. I mean, Stan's talking about spending a whole day prepping your show. We tend to spend a day, you know, correcting the show that we didn't prep for on the first day. So that's, we're getting it wrong, Stan. I'm going to fix that going forward.
So now, I was working in America without a green card. Now, if you get caught working without a green card, you're in trouble. I had an immigration lawyer, who actually was an ex-South African, working on my change of status to get a green card, which is permanent residency. And my green card was coming up, and he said, you're going to have to be interviewed. If they ask, have you been working? Because the question does arise, and if you lie, you perjure yourself, and you jeopardize your chances of ever getting citizenship. He said, if you're out of the country, the question doesn't arise. He said, go back to South Africa for a couple of months, wait for the interview to happen, then come back. And it took longer than I thought. So the friends that I'd worked with at JWT were now working at Gray Phillips. That whole bunch just moved
across,
moved across. Do you remember that?
Well, Daryl Phillipson was such a driving force in those. That was the epicenter of creativity in the industry. Gray Phillips, Bunton, Mundell and Black, I think it was.
What are they sometimes called? Gray Phillips, Blunder, Muddle and Fake. No, they really were the epicenter.
Yeah, they were, absolutely.
They refused to enter the Lurys because they said, we're not going to have these people judging our creativity. Eventually, of course, they changed their minds. So I got offered a job at Gray Phillips as a writer, senior copywriter, and then I became creative director in charge of radio and TV. 702 was just starting. This was 1980. And lo and behold, talk about, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all.
Yeah.
The guy who fired me from Swazi Radio because I wanted his job was now running 702.
Okay, let's start piecing. I'm piecing it together in my mind. Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, okay, I was remembering it all now, yeah.
So they knew of my experience in the States, so they would have been crazy not to hire me. They realized that it was in their best interest to hire me because of my experience. Mm. So they gave me the graveyard shift. Sunday night, 10 o'clock, after Casey Kasem. Remember Casey?
Casey, the hit parade, yep.
Hit parade. Yep. The top 40, Casey Kasem's yep. top yep. 40. So that ran and finished at about 10. I would then take over till midnight. But I was allowed to play my own music, which was a big inducement. And the show started developing a following because, again, people were hearing music they had not been hearing on radio in this country. So this went on, and then they offered me Afternoon Drive, which was the Stan Katz Good Time Lowdown Rock and Roll Radio Show. As
it kind of rolls off the tongue.
Everybody would get it wrong, but and that did well. I went to Gray. I was so happy at Gray. I was in an environment that I loved, creative environment, crazy people, creative people, and doing great work and having fun.
Yeah.
So I went to Bunton, and he became one of my mentors as well. I really, another guy I loved so much because of what I learned from him. He was a mentor. One thing I learned from him was choice is pain. And choice is pain. So I said, listen, I've been offered this job. Mm. Doing 4 to 7 on radio, and I'd like to take it, but I don't want to give up this. And obviously, in advertising, the day doesn't end at 4 o'clock, or it would have been 3:30 for me to get across town. Mm. And they said, "Can't get. It doesn't work like that." I agonized for weeks or months about whether to take the radio show or give it up and stay where I was happy. And eventually I decided I was going to take the radio show, which was only a couple of hours a day. I started doing freelance copywriting. That turned into Marcus Katz Michael, mm-hmm. our own little agency.
Yep.
And then they offered me, 702 offered me the job of doing Afternoon Drive, but sales and marketing director. And then I discovered I actually loved the business end of things more than I enjoyed being on air. Being on air is hard. If you're doing it properly, it takes effort. It's hard work. I enjoyed doing the prep. Mm. But then I rapidly became, this was as 85, by 87 I was managing director of 702, and I was doing the morning zoo. So, I mean, I was Stan the man and Stan the manager, which became very difficult. So I gave up my on-air show and focused on the business end of things. And I think what changed it and what had an impact on radio generally in South Africa, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but I went around and I asked everybody in the organization, well, not everybody, all the main people in the station, what business are we in? Because I realized that if this thing's going to succeed, it has to be run as a business. Mm-hmm. I got answers like, we're in the broadcasting business. We're in the news business. Some people even thought we were in the music business. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, where does the money come from? And they said, well, that's easy. It comes from advertising. Mm-hmm. So I came up with a slogan, we're in the business of delivering prospects to advertisers. And I would say this even to listeners, that our job is to get it, is to sell you to advertisers. Yeah. But we're going to give you a hell of a great ride.
So that particular mantra, I know, has informed your book. And to our listeners out there, we've got a couple of copies of Stan's book here, which is Radio Advertising and Sound Investment, 10 Key Principles for Maximizing Return. And I know that...
rolled
off my false teeth there, rather badly, I thought. But I know that's a mantra that permeates this book. It's one of the key thoughts that have driven your interface. And I know you've been training in Africa. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's get back to that.
Thanks for joining us on the Doc and Guru podcast for part one of the life and times of radio icon and MTN Radio Awards Hall of Famer, Stan Katz. Please join us next week when we talk about Stan the Man and his new radio show starting on Chai FM. And remember, if it ain't happy, it ain't happening.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then for my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mateus. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.